Okay, I think we'll get started. Welcome to the final presentations and perspectives in assistive technology. Thanks for coming. Thanks for being a part of the course. As always, if there's anybody has any questions, now's the time. Want to bring a couple things. There's a course evaluation available on Access. This is a very general type of evaluation, so please, I've been encouraged to tell you to fill that out, and you're encouraged to do so. The benefit is that you get your grades earlier. I guess that's a benefit. So please do that. And that includes not only people who have worked on a project, but other people, other students as well. And I'm going to pass around a sign-up sheet for our burrito celebration on Thursday. If you haven't signed up and can make it, please do. I hope you can make it, because this is your reward for doing such a great job during the year. So it'll be just adjacent to the building at what's called the AT&T Garden Terrace. The best way to get there is go up the elevator, make a left off the elevator, down the corridor, make a left at the giant disc platter, and follow around to lobby. And outside the lobby is the Garden Terrace. We will meet in here on Thursday. Prior to that, there'll be some evaluations that I'll be handing out that will be specific to the class. So please be here on Thursday for that, too. Also want to tell you that on Friday we're moving, everybody in the design group is moving their office from the fifth floor of Terman to Building 550, also known as the Peterson Building. And here it is in relationship to Terman, and we're sort of up here someplace. So it's a building right near the church, and next quarter, please come by, see our new new building. It's newly renovated on the inside. It's pretty exciting. And I'll be in 113, so that's there's an entrance off of Panama Mall over here, and I'll be on the first office on the right. Okay. And today we'll have the final presentations from the two student groups. Pass around the attendance sheet for the last time. I want to recap what the students have done this year. It was 10 weeks ago today that we started class, and at that class the students were introduced to a variety of project suggestions. Students formed teams and selected a project to work on. They talked with the person who suggested the project, figured out what the problem was, identified a need to address. They brainstormed various design concepts. They selected a concept and worked on it. They fabricated prototypes, tested it, iterated the process, and today we're going to have the final presentations. So first on board is Team Quadruped. Kane's project, and Harpreet is the presenter.
Thanks, Dave. Oops, is this? Hello? Okay. Thanks, Dave. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Harpreet, and I'll be talking to you a little bit about the project that I've worked on over the past 10 weeks called Dr. Kane's Canes. I'll outline my presentation. I'll begin by introducing a little bit more about myself, and then introduce you to Dr. Kane, and then move into the background and the motivation for the project, and then discuss what had been already done when I picked the project, and then I'll outline the objective of my project and what my design goals were, and then I'll recap the design phase and then end with by showing you the final project and discussing future directions. So the name of my team is Team Quadruped, and in this team there is an I. I'm a team of my own. And I'm a junior in the mechanical engineering program, and in the future I'm interested in medical devices and social entrepreneurship as career choices. So Dr. Thomas Kane is 86 years old, and he's a professor emeritus at Stanford University. So due to his age, Dr. Kane, for balance and stability, requires some level of external support while walking, standing, or negotiating stairs. And he currently uses a four-wheel walker as his main mobility device. And the fact that he uses a four-wheel walker implies that he relies on the walker mainly for balance and not for load-bearing, because literature shows that four-wheel walkers are used by higher-functioning patients who require minimal weight-bearing. And on the left is a four-wheel walker that's similar to the one that Dr. Kane currently uses. And on the right is just another representation of a four-wheel walker. And four-wheel walkers are great for the function that they're meant to serve. They provide Dr. Kane the ability to balance, but they're just too large, too bulky, and they're not ideal for storage and portability. Okay, so just to recap, Dr. Kane uses a four-wheeled walker, but the problems that he has with the walker are not in the sense that the walker doesn't function well, it's just that it's too bulky and too large, and therefore not easily storable or portable. Okay, so you might be thinking, all right, well, why doesn't Dr. Kane just use canes and crutches? Right? They're lightweight, they occupy minimal space, they provide balance. But canes also function as load-bearing devices, and as I mentioned to you earlier, Dr. Kane does not need something that supports his weight. He only requires external support for balance and stability. And we'll come back to this point why canes and crutches are not the appropriate solution for Dr. Kane. So what does Dr. Kane need? The one-sentence project description is that Dr. Kane wants a streamlined mechanical solution that matches his four-wheel walker in function, but unlike his walker, it's lightweight and compact. Okay. Right. So is this project only for Dr. Kane? And the short answer is no. This was motivated by Dr. Kane, and I worked directly with Dr. Kane, and so there will be a lot of Dr. Kane in this project, but it has the potential to help other individuals who require balance and stability as well. So when I picked up this project, Doug Schwant is an engineer, had been already working on a prototype for Dr. Kane. And so it's pictured here on the left, and I will show you here the real version of it here in a second. And he did this outside of the parking lot at AS Hardware using PVC tubing and fittings and tape. Okay, so it was a quick prototype for Dr. Kane. But it turns out that Dr. Kane was actually extremely content with how the first prototype worked out. And so here's the first prototype that was created for the canes that Dr. Kane was looking for. So the objective of this project was to enhance the first prototype that was built through by improving or adding three additional features. And in order of priority, Dr. Kane wanted this angle here between the what I call the forearm segment and the bottom member to be adjustable. So he wanted this angle adjustable. And the other improvement that he desired was an interface for his forearms. As you can see currently, the idea is there, but there's not a there's just not a functioning interface for his forearms. And the last improvement that he desired was he wanted the bottom member to be of adjustable height. So this is coming back to why canes and crutches are not the appropriate solution. With these canes, Dr. Kane hopes to mimic or imitate sort of a quadruped gait as you typically see in four-legged animals. And so to demonstrate, canes and crutches are typically used here on this side, but with these, Dr. Kane wants to use them up here. And at any point in time, he has four possible points of contact with the ground, and at least three are always touching the ground, which provides him more level of stability and balance as compared to when he's just walking on his two feet and has only one point of contact with the ground. So, and then literature shows that this gait has maximum static stability. And since the canes don't need to support Dr. Kane's weight, it's possible to use a lightweight material such as graphite composite for the final construction. So, why does he want an adjustable angle? So the reason why he wants an adjustable angle is purely for personal preferences. He just wants to be able to experiment with different angles before settling on a default one or having two or three like that he likes the most. So it's purely personal for why he desires an adjustable angle. He wants to be able to, in illustrating the reference point for these angles, so there is a vertical position right here. So imagine if this is completely perpendicular to the ground. From this reference point, he wants to be able to extend 35 degrees and in increments of 5 to 10 degrees. But the thought was that the option to exceed 35 degrees or to even have negative angles may help in distorting the device. And Angelo is not here, but during the last presentation, he suggested that negative angles could also be explored as an option to maybe in climbing stairs as opposed to the adjustable height. So there's a couple benefits of having negative angles. And since there isn't an analytical way to determine what the perfect angle is, this project aimed to provide Dr. Kane the ability to change the angle by at least 35 degrees in 5 to 10 increments. So again, here's the vertical that I pointed out, and then he wanted the angle adjustable at least 35 degrees. As I mentioned before, the current prototype lacks a well-functioning interface for the forearms and hands, or interface between his forearms and hands and between the corresponding segment on the canes. Okay, and then this project sought to provide Dr. Kane better forearm rests and the ability to grip onto the canes using horizontal handlebars. And Dr. Kane wanted the bottom member to be of adjustable height for two reasons. He wanted to just experiment with different heights again, just in arriving at his default height, but he wanted that also to be able to negotiate stairs. So the thought being, when he's climbing stairs, he would decrease the length of the canes depending on the step size of the stairs, and then in coming down, he would increase the length depending on the step size again. Okay. And while I did consider designs that would allow me to make that member of adjustable height, I didn't integrate that in the final prototype due to the lack of time. And here are some overall design considerations that I made for the overall configuration of the canes. So here's one. So this is the bottom member, but then there's a part that extends beyond what it is currently. And the hand grip would be right here, and there would be a trough right here, and this angle is the one that we're adjusting. And this was motivated by the fact that one of the professionals that I talked to suggested that the current arm placement or orientation poses a risk of developing carpal tunnel if used over an extensive period of time. So this was the arm placement angle originally, so this alleviates it by making it horizontal. This design I just considered as just another possible alternative. No specific reason. Here's a cuff for sort of the upper segment, and then this is the adjustable angle. And the last one is similar to the way that the canes are currently, but instead of a cuff, which is what Dr. Kane is leaning towards, I considered implementing a trough here. And the other design decision that I had to make was between a vertical hand grip and a horizontal hand grip. So on this one, it's the idea is there for a horizontal hand grip, and the other design, or I guess the other way that it could have been done is to have a vertical hand grip. So this is the horizontal, and this is the vertical hand grip. Perhaps the most difficult challenge of this project was trying to figure out how to make the angle adjustable between the forearm segment and the bottom member. So I considered a couple different mechanisms. There I considered using gears as a mechanism, a ratchet mechanism that I shared with you during my final or midterm presentation, and the last one that I might not have covered at that time was sort of a pin slot mechanism, which I'll explain here in a couple slides down. So I had all these ideas, and then to settle on the final ones, I sat down with Deborah Kenny, who is an occupational therapist, to receive her insight about different features and so forth. So as an occupational therapist, Debbie was actually very disapproving of any movable parts or adjustable parts. She just didn't like that idea or those ideas. For example, even having an adjustable angle or having an adjustable height just from a safety point of view. So she thought both of those features posed safety risks. So her general recommendation was to build devices with the fewest number of moving and adjustable parts. So I unfortunately spoke to Debbie too late, and while I received her, no one had up until that point challenged the adjustable angle or the adjustable height, but I didn't have a chance to integrate recommendations into my final projects. Okay. So I decided to keep the overall configuration of the canes generally the same as the initial prototype. And there are a couple reasons. One, Dr. Kane actually didn't suggest that as an area of improvement, so he was actually content with the way that they, the overall shape of them currently. The defining feature is that of the current is that this angle right here, when this is in its middle position, is about 30 degrees. And then I didn't need to consider some of the other overall design configurations because when I spoke to Debbie, she alleviated the concern that someone else had expressed about the arm orientation placement leading to carpal tunnel. So she said that she actually found that this was an ideal angle for the arms to be in. And then this between the vertical and the horizontal hand grip was also, again, a decision that was motivated by the fact that Dr. Kane preferred the horizontal hand grips as opposed to the vertical one. And I guess one possible explanation for that might be because I think the natural resting position of the hands is more horizontal than vertical. So I kept that to be the horizontal hand grip and used a cuff instead of a trough. And I chose to use a pin slot mechanism for changing the angle for six different reasons. One, it was an idea that I came up with. The other ideas had been kind of tossed at me. And I felt that it had an intuitive user interface in the sense that it was intuitive in the sense that, it's obvious that, these angle or these notches here represent different angles. It provided the ability to have a wide range of angles. It was easy to manufacture, and it integrated well with the project. And I felt that it provided a strong joint, but it was very simple in the number of parts that it used and the number of moving parts and so forth. So wherever possible, I also did consider making the canes as light as possible, because that was, again, one of the things that Dr. Kane wanted, was the lightweight of these canes. For example, reducing these part thicknesses down to the bare minimum, where they still had structural integrity, but they didn't need to be necessarily twice that width. So to summarize the final canes that I designed, they have an adjustable angle feature. They're fairly lightweight. They have a horizontal handlebar for the grip and a cuff for the forearm, and they can be conveniently stored and transported. I'll demonstrate with one of these to begin with. So here's the pin slot what I call the pin slot mechanism for changing the angle, and you can adjust this and fix it to any one of these notches. And so the middle hole is where the angle is 45 degrees, and I can go 40 degrees one way or 40 degrees in the opposite way. And I'm using a ball detent clevis pin to hold the angle once I've determined where I want to set it at. Dr. Kane, when I tested these with him, did need external support in trying to remove the pin and put it back into position. And on a second thought, this didn't actually occur to me earlier, but this pin slot mechanism actually might not be appropriate for him, because he does have limited eyesight, and so he might not be able to decipher between one hole and the next hole. So, but nevertheless, I think it helps Dr. Kane experiment with the canes using different angles. And just in testing it with him, he preferred the narrower angles over the wider angles. Okay. And one thought that I have is that I think that further extensive testing with him will help him, you know, narrow his preferred angle choices down to one or two. And if he can get to that point, I think automating the process as opposed to it being really manual here will be a little bit more feasible if he's only having to select between a couple angle choices. But in general, this design here provides him the ability to test at various different angles. Tied to the adjusting angle is the fact that these canes are what I deem easily storable and portable. And so there is a slot right here where I can bend this part and lock it right here. So as opposed to this awkward shape that's kind of difficult to put away, I can make it a little bit more linear by removing it and pinning it right here. Oops. Let's see. So it makes it a little bit more linear. And I put a picture of this restaurant here, because I met Dr. Kane at a bistro, and he had to put his, so this is again another advantage of this, his locker was outside of the restaurant, but I brought these in not knowing, I thought we were going to test them right away, but I was able to fold them up and tuck them nicely under the table, so he was able to have them right there if he were to use these in the long run, whereas this locker was outside, so it worked out very well. So I'm going to shift this back to, the handlebar right now is integrated within the part that allows the angle to be adjustable, and it's tubular in nature and provides him contact, or he can grip onto this with using about three fingers here. I didn't do any ergonomic analysis, but I think in future iterations, I mean, this is just a round piece of plastic, but I think it'll be important to consider ergonomics in designing the ultimate handlebar. And the material that these cuffs are made out of is adjustable, and while I did adjust these cuffs to Dr. Kane's, the girth of his forearms, he just didn't find the sealed connection that he was looking for, so he felt that it was still pretty loose here. I think he was looking for something that was more along the lines of like where he felt like strapped in, which is I guess what you saw here. So I think maybe something like this in a future design where it's a trough and has a strap that you can adjust using Velcro might be able to provide him the sealed connection that he's looking for with the canes. But in general, Dr. Kane found the second prototype very much a step in the right direction. He was most satisfied with the ability to adjust the angle. And the other thing is, given his eyesight, Dr. Kane wasn't able to critically analyze how the parts integrated with each other or how the cane looked overall, partly because I think he wasn't able to see, the fact that there was a pin slot mechanism. A couple of future directions. Of course, there are improvements that are needed in the second prototype. So the current angle changing mechanism allows Dr. Kane to experiment with angles, but I think he would have one difficult time adjusting the angles if he were to independently. So I think automating the angle changing process is one future direction. The adjustable height needs to be integrated into the canes. And then, as I mentioned, Dr. Kane did not find the forearm rest as secure as he would have liked. And then while I wasn't able to consider some of Debbie's points and suggestions in this prototype, but I think going into the future, it will be important to consider. I guess Debbie labeled this very much an engineering project, so it'll be important to consider the occupational therapy point of view in constructing a third iteration. And a lot of the cane, or I guess actually most of everything here has been kind of, I think this looks okay. Like, for example, the 30-degree angle that I was trying here, but it doesn't necessarily have a mechanical explanation behind it. So, and then in terms of the loads, it feels strong, but who knows that over time it might degrade. So I think it'll be important to perform, do some number crunching and figure out where the loads and so forth are. And I'd like to thank all these people for their help and support. Dave Jaffe, the course instructor, Doug Schwant was my engineering coach, an enormous help, and then Dr. Thomas Kane, and then Mike Norell, Deborah Kenny, and Paul Noonan all assisted with the project. And I'll finish off by showing just a couple pictures of Dr. Kane testing, and then I do have a couple of videos that I'll show. Oh, and then when I did show it to him, I wasn't completely all the way finished with the project, so there weren't any handle grips when he tested it. But I think it repeats itself, so let me think there's another one. So, so the arm ones here are way too big because I cut them down at the end. So. Thanks so much, and I'll take any questions.
Thank you. In regard to studying the ankle, do you think some tactile markings might help Dr. King?
Yeah, I was actually thinking about, I think that right now there's 9 different spots, and so I'm not sure, you know, it's definitely worth considering, but I think that he doesn't need, for example, as angles wide as like this one, for example, but I gave that option to him. So I think if there's just, you know, 2 or 3, then I think tactile sensing will definitely be useful in just trying to determine where. But I think that, like, ultimately I see this sort of as like a knob system where he's able to turn it and then it, you know, latches into one angle and so forth. Is it going to get in the way of him recovering his balance, or is it going to help him?
If you've got sticks on the end of your arms, you're trying to grab onto something, you're going to support yourself.
Sorry, I'm not understanding your question.
In the picture right here, at least, before he gets to that point, if he stumbles, he might try to grab onto the chair.
Oh, I see.
Okay. And now he's got to let go and detach from his arm, from his cane, in order to do that. But is the cane itself going to provide him enough support so he stumbles and keep
him from falling? I think that falls, are in some sense not... Maybe inevitable is the wrong word, but even with current four-wheel walkers, I'm sure that they're not 100% effective. And so in much the same way, I don't expect these to, you know, save him every single time. But I think that in general, my understanding is that he's not looking for a permanent replacement for his walkers. He just wants this as a substitute when he wants it to be. So in terms of, I don't have enough science background determining whether this will actually help him regain his balance in the long run or whether it will help him or whether it will work against that. But the idea is that these should be able to provide him balance in the same amount and level as his four-wheel walker. I'm not sure if that answers your question, but... Sorry, what was, sorry?
And I've seen
more
canes, so you can adjust the
cane. Oh, I see.
And there's a series of holes, just like the horse.
Okay.
And when they pop out, you know, if you let go of it, when you get to where you want, you can kind of angle it, and it just locks.
Okay, yeah.
Is that something you might use? I don't know if that would be easier. I mean, a knob might be easier if you feel for it.
Mm-hmm. What I've noticed is that, as these have been used more, it's becoming a little bit easier to just move them in and out. So I think that the, yeah. Okay. And then you guys can try these out at the end if.
She was conservative 2 slides at the end.
Yeah.
one of them. So just look for that, I think.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our final presentation on the Deep Brain Stimulation Vest Enhancement Project. Next slide, please. Here is our agenda for the presentation. An introduction, a project description, the project background, the problem overview, the solutions overview, the final solution selection, and the project future. Our team is called the Rechargers. The team leader is Reed Miller, who is a senior at Stanford University. The team members include myself, Dara Roberts. I'm a freshman at Stanford University. And there are two additional team members who are from neurosurgery at Kaiser Permanente, Carol Evans and Eric Sableman. Next slide. The project description. The DBS Recharging Vest Enhancement Project addresses the problems with the current vest design and will ensure that it is easy for the user to put on independently and wear comfortably. Next slide, please. Deep brain stimulation, or DBS, is used for treatment when medication is ineffective. It can be used to treat Parkinson's disease, tremor syndromes, pain syndromes, dystonia, Tourette syndrome, and other disorders. Next slide. Here is a short video of deep brain stimulation.
I couldn't ride a bicycle, I couldn't type.
Parkinson's originates in the subthalamic nucleus section of the brain. An area about the size of a pea, it's associated with steady muscle control. Parkinson's is normally caused by a lack of dopamine, a neurotransmitter that keeps the brain's electric circuits flowing smoothly. Without dopamine, the brain can produce abnormal electrical signals, which affects the body's central nervous system. Because his normal medication was failing to control his tremors, Stephen became a candidate for a complex medical procedure that promised to control his quakes and give him back his life. There was just one catch. He had to have electrodes implanted deep inside his brain.
I have a computer that constantly sends impulses into my brain to keep me functional, and I'm a cyborg.
Even with the tremors growing worse, the thought of brain implants was not exactly appealing.
You know, initially, I have to say that the idea of having wires put into your brain seemed like a really bad idea. It seemed like a bad idea on steroids, like emblazoning it in capital letters, a bad idea, and just didn't walk away from it.
But there he was at Stanford University Hospital, having what's known as deep brain stimulation surgery.
This has been a complete miracle. I could move, I could tap my fingers. I was really very, very happy. In fact, I had the surgeons worried because I was so happy they were afraid they had affected me, probed the wrong place, and they'd be before.
The surgery hasn't cured Stephen's Parkinson's, but it's helped him manage his symptoms, and his quality of life is dramatically better.
I've got a pacemaker implanted under my collarbone, which has a small computer in it. It communicates through wires that run through my scalp, goes up to a pair of plastic caps in my skull, wires that go right down through my brain into my subthalamic nucleus, and it's feeding a constant stimulus of impulses to my subthalamic nucleus to quiet those electrical storms that are caused by Parkinson's.
Okay, next slide, please. Here we have an X-ray and a close-up picture showing the implantable pulse generator, or IPG. It should last up to 9 years when maintained by adequate charging. The goal of our project is to help ensure that adequate charging is done, thereby helping to maintain the proper functioning of the implantable pulse generator. Next slide. The Medtronic Deep Brain Stimulator must be recharged at home by the patient on a regular basis. The frequency could be from 3 to 5 times a week with varying durations of charging time. This is done by using the vest which houses the recharging unit or coil. Next slide. Here is a picture of the designed for the current Medtronic vest. On the left is the vest itself. The circular piece on the strap of the vest contains the recharging coil. The device in the middle of the picture is the recharging unit. It holds the battery for charging. It also lets the user know when the device is placed properly over the implantable pulse generator and when charging is completed. The device on the right is the AC converter. The user can charge the unit either plugged into an AC outlet or disconnected from the AC outlet using the battery. Next slide, please. The magnitude of the problem. The recharging unit must be approximately within 1 to 2 inches of the implanted device, the implantable pulse generator, and must be less than 1 inch from the surface of the patient's skin in order to make proper contact. Deep brain stimulation patients with arm tremor or dystonia who are prescribed stimulators with rechargeable batteries have significant trouble positioning the charging coil over the implanted pulse generator. However, pain patients given similar stimulators do not appear to have the same challenges. The problem becomes more severe if the battery becomes discharged to the point that the stimulator no longer functions properly. Next slide, please. Once implanted, the device can take up to 6 months of programming before the patient gains the full benefits of the device. During this time period, the patient may have limited functionality even with the unit charged properly. The vest provided for holding the charging coil in place is difficult for a person with impaired arm and or hand functions to put on. Patients report that the vest often does not position the coil properly or keep it in place, causing greatly increased charging time. Next slide. Interviews with product users. One constraint of the project was that the team could not meet or discuss issues directly with the users of the device. All information was relayed to the team via Eric and Carol in order to get background information and patient experiences. Users are extremely dissatisfied with the charging process. The vest makes it extremely difficult to position the charger in the proper location. Patients are seeing charging times increase 2 or 3 times when they what they expected. In addition, the devices have to be charged more frequently, possibly 5 times a week instead of 3 times a week. Users can only perform limited activities during charging in order to minimize the charger device movement. A sports bra was used by one of the patients as the only method that would keep the charger in place properly. I will now turn the presentation over to Reed Miller, who will discuss the design solutions. Reed?
Okay. So what we really wanted to do was to have a vest that made it easy to take on and put off, and basically a one-size-fits-all system, and essentially, most importantly, to keep the charger in place so the inefficient charging times would probably be reduced. And it also needed to be a very comfortable fit. So some of our solutions that we initially decided upon is we thought of a plastic bag essentially that you would essentially stick to your chest and insert the charger. But we found out there would be problems with elderly patients and you would have to keep replacing these sticky pads. So that went out of the door. We also thought of a belt-type charging system similar to St. Jude's system, but that would not work as it would have improper placement for the implantable device. The third option would be somewhat like a headphone-type system in which you could just place it over the recharging device and easily move it around, but there probably would be excessive clamping pressure, so we didn't want to cause any of the patient's discomfort. We also looked at magnets, multiple plastic shoulder pieces, harnesses, but each one of those had its own problems. And these are some of the harnesses that we looked at as possible solutions, because we thought the harness situation would be the best because it would be most natural for most people to use. These are some of our design concepts. As you can see, we initially went with the clamshell device and then sort of phased over to a shoulder-type harness system in which the pressure would keep the charger in place. Finally ending up as that design, a very easy-to-use system that would be used with Velcro straps and have key pressure on. This was our initial prototype, very initial prototype, I might add. but it allowed us to, it was made with stretchy material, and it allowed us to actually use some of the, kind of customize it to have some of the previous design solutions, mainly phase 2 and phase 3. And it worked out pretty well. We liked that it was stretchy, and it had some decent amount of pressure, but we found out that making the main strap go around the waist and having it come over your shoulder provided the easiest solution to use, which went into our final prototype, which actually works fairly well. It is extremely functional, and it hit on some of the key points, especially that Carol Evans suggested to us that she is actually now suggesting a shoulder-type harness similar to what we've designed to her patients as a way of using the elastic pressure to keep the charger in place. We did a similar type design. I can actually demo it now. It's just simple. It goes over your shoulder, wraps around your vest or chest, and you're able to insert the charger underneath this stretchy elastic strap to keep pressure on it. And it's one size fits all, basically, and you're able to use it on either shoulder depending where the charger is placed. So we try to think of all possible solutions. You can play around if you want. Later. So this is where we initially started. This is actually what Carol Evans suggests to her patient currently, similar to our shoulder design. And this is where we are now. For the future of the project, we would definitely like to decrease the size of this because it is quite large. However, since it has the functional features that we like, we are kind of trying to see which one's better and what we can lose and what we can gain. It's kind of heavy, not too heavy, and it's a little bit strong and kind of hard to put on, especially if you have weak muscles. So we're trying to look into increase the usability, maybe decrease the strength in some parts and increase it in others. We also want to test it with actual users since we're not allowed any contact with the user, so we're going to have to go through other means to do that. Also, and obviously fix any defects that would occur and would rise with the users. And obviously find a manufacturer for it to produce it somewhat better of a prototype than I'm able to do, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. As far as acknowledgements go, all right.
Certainly should incite Medtronic to pay more attention to this kind of a need before they put something out on the market. And one of the steps that you didn't mention is that if they decide to, they can redesign parts of the electronics, which are also clumsy to use.
This is true.
Just the vest. It's the fact that you've got to put a fairly large piece of equipment into that vest, and they don't.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be that large. So the combination of working from your starting point, going back to redesigning the charging electronics, and another iteration of the whole thing is probably what will happen.
Yes. Well, hopefully.
There's a weakness in the off-the-shelf shoulder strap that Carol Evans has suggested, because it's intended as a thermal barrier. It's supposed to keep your shoulder warm. Well, that's all very good, but the little charging coil generates a little bit of heat too.
So that,
and you can imagine the the thing getting hot enough to be uncomfortable. And now here's another reason why you can't fully charge it. You got to take it off and let it cool down. So we hope that doesn't happen.
Yes.
Did you consider any magnetic or any coupling device that these two pieces would seek one another?
We actually did consider that, but apparently there would be interference between the coupling device. We thought it would be great just to have it and put it on your chest and have it stay there, but there would be interference with the charging system. And we would probably have to redesign the charging system and go through more patent process, and they thought it would be easier just to fix the vest, so instead of address the real problem.
And some of the devices use an internal magnetic switch. On and off. You don't want to accidentally turn it off when you put it on the chart.
This is also true.
I know that one of your concerns is wearability, so, and I know when you went from that second prototype, where it was more. Because I knew you were trying to get the elasticity and the ability to stick close. Do you feel that in your final design it's more wearable than somebody can put over the jacket?
Well, definitely, you can put it over a jacket, as I've been putting over my shirt. I mean, it's extremely usable, and I think it's even more usable if you keep the strap where you left it off, and so you can just put your arm through it, and you basically just need to do one Velcro strap instead of clicking it in or anything like that.
Do you think it would be easy to use by a person with some mobility impairments?
We haven't tested yet, obviously. I feel as though it would be simply because we were using Velcro instead of a clasp-type system where they have to get it in the hole, and they literally can just take this part and put it anywhere and it can get there. I do have some concerns over how hard they need to pull it around their chest. We obviously need to look at that as far as strength is concerned, but as far as fixing a person with tremors, it's a wide enough surface of contact that anywhere they put it, it's going to hit something to stick. With a t-shirt, we actually thought of the design. The problem with t-shirts is that it would have to be something that would be extremely tight because... it would have to be extremely close-fitting, and this would essentially be the same thing, except you don't have to put on an entire t-shirt because that would probably be harder for a person who's shaking. So we thought about that. And, I mean, this is... We would initially like to have it as the same material and same size as you would essentially just be putting on a cutout t-shirt with some Velcro. We haven't thought of that, but yeah, that's definitely something we could approach.
What material is this made out of?
Just simple elastic. I've actually no idea. I mean, we got it at where is it? Yeah, I think we got it at Home Depot. Yeah. So. Yeah, and this is a mix of spandex and. Something else. I don't really know. And this is actually fairly stretchy, but it's just it's not stretchy enough, so.
Any more questions?
I think they'll be able to test it. You don't have access to the users right now. Will you be able to test it for the check if you have, when, the user?
Hopefully, we would have to probably go through Carol, I would assume, to actually get it. Give it to her, and then she gives it to a user, and then the user can tell her how if it works, and then she can tell us. So, eventually, yes, we can get it to the user and get feedback back.
But I want to thank you once again for a terrific project and a great presentation.
Thank you.
And I'd like to come down, take a closer look at this and the canes, and assuming there's no other questions in here, we can be here for a while. Thank you for attending.